Authentic Wellness Radio.
All right, everybody, welcome back to episode number 50 of Authentic Wellness Radio. And today I'm joined by Neely Quinn, Certified Integrative Clinical Nutrition Therapist. That is a mouthful. Specializing in paleo and primal eating. She's the author of Paleo Comfort and also The Complete Idiot's Guide to Eating Paleo. Neely, is that The Complete Guide for Idiots or A Guide for Complete Idiots, that one?
I like to think of it as the first one.
Okay, gotcha. So I'll be able to read it then. So you were also the host of Women Only, the Weight Loss Solution Conference, which was on, I believe, late last year. And she also has a double major in psychology and zoology from the University of Wisconsin. Joining me on the show, Neely Quinn. How are you going today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thank you for joining me. Now, you have a degree in zoology, and your dream was to be a primatologist like Jane Goodall. Who's Jane Goodall?
Who's Jane Goodall? What, do you live on a rock?
She's I live in a different country to you. I've got no idea.
She's a British primatologist. She's like the most famous primatologist or zoologist, I think, in the world. She did work with gorillas and chimpanzees and did a lot with like how their behavior is very similar to ours.
So is she kind of like David Attenborough, sort of?
No, because she lived out there with them for years, basically.
That's fascinating. So what is it then that that led you to go down the health road if you had a degree in psychology and zoology? So like a lot of people who have appeared on this podcast, at one point for you, your health was an issue. What happened there?
Yeah, well, since I was a kid, I always knew that I wanted to help people. Like, I've always been interested in human behavior. And then after college, well, first of all, I decided I didn't want to be a primatologist because I actually went and studied primates in the wild and it was terrible. So I changed my mind. I wanted to be a psychologist. But then I started to get sick and I had all kinds of digestive issues. And I had headaches and I had skin problems and I had depression and I had rashes and whatever. And so I started studying and I decided
it actually was a bit more than that. You went blind in one eye as well, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I did. That was really what spurred all of it. I was having a really stressful time in my life. And I remember I was just eating like chocolate cake. And to make up for the chocolate cake, I'd have spinach salad. And I was a vegetarian also. And all of a sudden I had this flash in my eye and that flash turned into a constant sort of strobe light in my eye. And after a while, it was just, I couldn't really see out of that eye. And there was no doctor who could tell me what it was. I mean, I was told by several, you know, like a neurologist, an ophthalmologist, a migraine specialist, my GP, they were like, I've never seen anything like this. I don't know what it is and I don't know what to do for you, which is really the scariest thing that could possibly be told to you by a doctor when you're in a desperate situation. And so I started researching everything I could and asking, you know, people for advice. And I came upon nutrition and it changed my life. So I decided I wanted to help people with nutrition after that.
So what was it nutritionally that you had to do to make all those things change?
Well, first of all, my particular body type, I don't do well without meat. And I had started to be a vegetarian at the age of 12. And this was when I was 23, when all of this started happening. And I think that I had depleted my body of protein quite a bit. And I wasn't like a healthy vegetarian either, which I think a lot of people can say. I was just eating, you know, starch and dairy all the time and sugar and hardly any vegetables. And, you know, it wasn't a good scene. And so I was depleted in a lot of things. And I started eating protein. I started eating fish and chicken and beef and everything again. And I started taking some supplements. I started trying to manage my blood sugar a little bit better. And, you know, that goes along with eating more protein and fat. I started seeing practitioners, you know, chiropractors and body workers and acupuncturists and people who could help, you know, realign my body. And supplements became my best friend for a while, which is a whole other story. But yeah, so slowly things started to change. And slowly I discovered that most of all, I had some food sensitivities, which I think were partly brought on because of the poor diet that I had and ruining my digestive system, basically. So I finally stopped eating gluten and dairy, and these were like very slow progressions. You know, I took out gluten and it got rid of like the itchiness on my skin. And then I took out dairy and it got rid of the constant yeast infections that I was having. I took out...
I've heard you say in the past that you lost 15 pounds in a month by changing one variable, which was getting rid of gluten.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, it was pretty
incredible. Didn't have that much weight to lose either.
Well, I'm 5 feet, and at that time I was about 120 pounds. And, no, I was like 125. And so I lost about 10 or 15 pounds that first month just because... I think that it gave me a lot of water retention. And I think that it does that for a lot of people. Because I'm not definitely the only person who's ever said that I lost a bunch of weight right when I took out gluten. So I took it out and yeah, and things started feeling better too. Like, and I started feeling less crazy with food because I would binge. I was a binger too. I'd binge on cookies and cake and brownies and not that that ended right away, but I felt a little bit less crazy, you know, like drugged, like a drug addict when I took out the gluten. But eventually it had to go even farther. And I don't think that everybody's like this, but for me, this is when I found paleo. It was actually after I was done with nutrition school and I still wasn't feeling perfect, you know, and nobody's ever going to feel perfect, but I still had skin issues and I still had some of the things going on. And I had learned about paleo in school and I was like, that's crazy. Like, how could you possibly take out grains and like, and all these things that we eat? But I did it. And then things started to fall into place.
Mm. So when it comes to the paleo diet, I mean, when most people come across it, it would make a lot of sense. You just eat whole foods, fruits, vegetables, seafood, and then all the stuff that you're supposed to stay away from, like vegetable oils, additives, chemicals, gluten and dairy. Once you kind of understand it, it all starts to make sense. But back in at some point in time, everyone must have been eating paleo and then everyone started not eating paleo. Why do you think the disconnect happened there between the way that everyone was eating that was just working really well for them and then suddenly eating differently? And obviously it didn't work, but they kept going. Where did that disconnect occur?
Well, nobody really knows. Like, I've researched this very question and it seems like at a certain point, like they'll go back to the Egyptian times or whatever. Like people started, our society changed and we started wanting to live more closely together and most of all stay in one place, which meant that we had to farm our own food. And the easiest things to farm are grains. And the thing is, like, I don't think there was ever a time when humans weren't eating some grains and some legumes. Like those things are harvestable, you know, like they're collectible. I think that we just weren't eating them in the amounts that we are now because like the paleo diet has been in quotes debunked because they found like grains on mortar and pestles from people like 50,000 years ago or things like that. But I mean, yeah, so we were probably eating them. It just wasn't in the same amounts. And so I think that it was just that we wanted to stay in one place and we wanted to have a lot of people in the same place.
That's probably a good answer, actually. Now, you were talking earlier about food sensitivities, which you had quite a lot of. I feel like this is kind of a modern thing that's happening. Food sensitivities and food allergies and whatnot. I don't really think we're meant to have those. I think those are a product of the way that we're living. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think it's a combination of a lot of things. And I don't think that it's new. I think that people, you know, when you look back in time at medical records, people have had, you know, eczema and psoriasis and headaches and bad menstrual cramps and all of these things for a very long time and maybe less or maybe more in like the Neolithic era, these last 30,000 years than before that. And certainly more in like the American society than if you go look at some primal cultures out there, like primitive cultures who are still eating a primal diet. And your question was the food sensitivities, right? So I think that it's a combination of A, stress. We're under a lot of stress in our lives. And I think that that can really mess with your digestion. I mean, I don't think so. That's just a fact. When you're under stress, you don't digest things as well. And so your digestion just isn't going to work properly. And that means that your, you know, this whole leaky gut thing starts to happen where your immune system starts to become involved in digestion, unfortunately, and your body can become sensitive in that way. I mean, sensitivity just means that you have an immune response to a food. And that starts to happen when you become, when you have a leaky gut. So I think it's stress, and I think it's the poor food quality that we have in general. I think it's the amount of toxins that we're eating, you know, in the amount of grains and legumes that we're eating, in all the chemicals that we're eating that we've never, that we'd like made up and put into our food. So I think it's a combination of all of those things.
Now, you say that there can potentially be quite a lot of wiggle room around the paleo diet, and that some people shouldn't eat nuts and seeds because they're not able to, but some people could, even though they're not technically paleo. You say for some people, coconut has to go out. For some people, grains need to go out. For some people, they can handle that quite well. Why is there that wiggle room there, and how can someone know if they need to be really strict or if they can wiggle around?
Yeah, so everybody's different, and like your body is different than my body, and that's just a fact of life. And I think that depending on the way that your body processes stress, you know, your diet as a child, your diet as a baby in the womb, your mother's diet, all of these things and genetics all play into how well we digest food, how well we process it, how well we metabolize it, and like what our immune system is doing. So everybody's different. And I don't think that everybody needs to be on paleo. I mean, my grandmother's 93 years old. She's like pretty healthy and she's never eaten paleo in her life. So I think that it just depends on your own body. And what I mostly try to get across to people is that you need to experiment on yourself to find out what works best. And sometimes it is that you can't eat nuts or seeds. And it took me, you know, 32 years of my life to figure out that, oh, nuts and seeds are what give me those heinous, you know, pains in my intestines and they make my joints hurt. And I'm not the only one that they do that to. And that's partly because of the way that we eat nuts and seeds. Like we're not processing the way that native people would, or that we would have even 100 years ago. Like we don't soak them. We don't sprout them. I mean, sometimes we roast them, but you're really not supposed to eat raw nuts and seeds. So that's kind of my short answer on that.
So what about the impact that someone's ancestral heritage has? So in certain parts of the world, for example, West Africa, they eat a lot of like starchy root vegetables there. They'll eat a lot of rice. They'll eat a lot of legumes because that's just what's available for them to eat. Whereas in other parts of the world, like Belgium or kind of European countries, they eat quite a lot of proteins and fats. They'll have heavy beef stews and those Belgian sausages and all kinds of things. So how does that carry over to the way that someone should be eating with regards to how much meat they should be having based on where they grew up or where their parents are from?
Well, okay. That's a really good question, and I have a lot of different answers to it. One is that there's a difference between being an African person whose heritage goes back thousands, maybe, you know, hundreds of thousands of years, and then me. And I'm like Native American, Irish, English, German, you know, all of these different, who knows what else I am. And so I'm kind of this mutt. And who knows what genes I got from what place in the world. If you're like an Italian person who's both of your parents are Italian and, you know, it goes back for centuries, then that's a different thing. And I think that there are some genetic and physiological changes that occur. So for instance, most people aren't really totally equipped to handle dairy after the age of, you know, 5 to 6 years old. And so a lot of us have some level of lactose intolerance. However, some people in Nordic countries and in some countries in Africa have their genes have actually changed so that they do have enough lactase to deal with the lactose. And so I think that, you know, that's one of the very few changes that they've actually documented. There are some people who contend that there aren't very many genetic changes that have gone along with like digestion and metabolism over the last hundreds of thousands of years. And that's why the paleo diet, you know, that's one of the tenets of the paleo diet is like we haven't changed very much genetically since we were hunters and gatherers. And so we should all be eating this hunter-gatherer type diet. So it's really hard to say. I'm sure that you could take a person from, say, Alaska, whose family has been there for thousands of years, and bring them down to Hawaii, and they would still be fine. You know, they would have to figure out what works best for them. But I don't think that it's like set in stone. This is what you have to eat because you were born and raised in Germany. You know, so that's kind of where I come from on that.
So what about the sugar versus fruit debate? Because there are a lot of people out there saying that you should be very restrictive with things like bananas and melons and watermelons and whatnot. Whereas other people say fruit is food, basically. And it's something that... What is it that you say? In your book, you said, as long as there's enough fiber and if you eat fruit with some kind of fat, you should be able to keep your blood sugar levels even, Steven. So what are your thoughts on that one?
Well... I'm a pretty disappointing interviewee because my answer is always, it depends on the person. So I personally work with a lot of athletes. I have changed my practice so that I only work with climbers at this point, rock climbers. And rock climbers are generally super active. And a lot of times they're overactive, like they overtrain. And so carbs for them, they either need to be on a pretty moderate carb diet in order to sustain the activity that we do, or they need to be super fat adapted and be like in a keto state. So when you talk about the general public though, like in Western countries, that's when you get into, well, you don't, and when I say the general public, I mean people who are pretty sedentary and they're eating probably too much because it's so easy to do. And so in that case, I think that when you watch your carbs, that can really help with weight loss and general health. So as far as sugar goes, if you're an athlete, it's something that you can potentially tolerate very well. And I do. I'm one of those people. I need carbs. And if I don't have them, I feel terrible. And when I say carbs, I mean starchy you know, like tapioca and sweet potatoes and fruit and honey and all those things. I have those every day. So I think that I do think that you shouldn't be having, you know, like a Gatorade or a Coke or, you know, pop or really sugary things on their own, unless you're about to go run, you know, a marathon and you actually really need that jolt of sugar to get you going. So in general, I think that it's best to know your body and know how much fruit you can tolerate and how much sugar and go from there. And I do agree with what I said still in the book. If you have some fat or protein with that fruit or whatever sugar you're having, it's going to have less of an impact on your blood sugar.
Even Steven, I did laugh when I saw that one.
Yeah.
So... do you think people could maybe test themselves out and eat some fruit or something starchy like that before exercise and maybe before they just go and sit at a desk and do some work or something, and possibly they'll have two different results, so that the fruit might work if they go and burn all that energy off in the gym, but it may cause issues if they just go and, or if they're just not active afterwards? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I'm saying that. And sometimes it's not something that you can see right away. It's not something where, you know, you're going to immediately gain weight in the next hour if you eat something sugary and then sit on your butt for the next hour, as opposed to eating the sugary thing and then going for a run. It doesn't necessarily work like that, but I do have clients where they're on a pretty low carb diet, and these are athletes, and then 2 days before a big event, they're going to start loading carbs a little bit more. And I don't mean loading carbs in the typical sense where they're eating, you know, hundreds and hundreds of grams of carbs, but even just like a sweet potato with every meal or something, to get them ready for that event, that can help with energy levels and strength and all of that. So yeah, I do believe that.
Now let's talk about exercise, and you're a sort of self-confessed exercise junkie. And if you're not hanging off the side of a mountain by your fingernails, then you're in the gym or doing yoga or something like that. And the paleo movement kind of says everything used to be better the way that it was, or we should go back to the way that things used to be. And when it comes to exercise, I've got to agree, because we've all got chairs now. We've all got phones that keep us looking down rather than looking up, but they haven't really made our lives significantly more pleasurable, I would guess. So in terms of paleo, how do you think someone should be exercising if they're being respectful of how the body's meant to work?
Well, that's super interesting to me, because I'm actually, one of my pastimes is actually researching how people who live more primal lives actually live. And more I'm realizing that these ideas that I had aren't necessarily true. So what I imagined people, hunter-gatherers, doing was like moving all day long and like walking around and then sprinting sometimes and like carrying things all, you know, all day long and then sleeping for a really long time at night. And when you actually, I mean, researchers have actually gone and documented hour by hour, minute by minute, what these people are doing. And a lot of them sit around most of the day, like lie around and then they party at night and they don't sleep very much. And they're also very, very healthy. So I'm not really sure. I think that it really depended on what subculture you are part of. And yes, I think that moving and carrying things and like doing occasional sprinting and things like that are good for you. But I don't think that it's necessarily the way that we think it is, or the way that even Mark's Daily Apple or all, you know, some of those sites make it out to be. I think that we should all be moving, but what I come across more often is that people are moving too much. Like, and maybe that's just the kind of client that I attract, is over exercisers. So I'm trying to tell people like chill out and not exercise so much. But if you're one of those people who sits on your butt all day, I mean, and you're overweight and you have diabetes and you have heart disease and you're on all these medications, then obviously something needs to change. Like what you're doing isn't working. And so moving around is good for you. And the reason that I am so into exercise is partly because it makes me feel really good. Like when I'm done with a session at the gym, I come home and I am pleasantly tired, you know, and kind of euphoric. So it feels good.
Mm. And it's funny as well, now that you mention that, I hear a lot of people say, or not a lot of people, but there's this perception that a hunter-gatherer means you've got to be chasing down food all the time. And I think if I was a hunter-gatherer, there's no way I'd be chasing anything. I'd make a trap. I'm not going to run around. I'm not going to try and run down a lamb or something like that.
Right.
That would be crazy.
Yeah, and I mean, there were only certain cultures who were doing the persistence hunting kind of thing, where they're running for days sometimes. And there was usually like a guy, and they still do that. Some cultures still do that in Africa. There was like one or three guys who were really good at it, and that guy would go, you know, and everybody else would just wait, which, you know, sounds pretty nice.
Yeah, I would not want to be that guy. So let's continue with this idea of like a paleo type lifestyle. Now, at the moment, life is pretty comfortable for us. I mean, we've got electricity, which was, we've got Steve Jobs or Richard Branson or someone to thank for that one. I can never remember who, but it's brought us things like heaters and air conditioners, which changes our physiology because we're no longer particularly cold and we're no longer particularly hot. It's kind of just the same temperature for us all the time. How does that affect the human body?
Well, I'm not an expert on that. Obviously, that's a good question, because I think that we should be in the cold and in the hot and then in the cold, and But if you look at people who live in near the equator, I mean, they don't have that. It's just kind of the same all of the time, and they're still healthy. I think that humans are super adaptable. And so while there's been plenty of research done on what cold can do for you, you sitting in ice baths and all of that. And I think that there's obviously some truth to that because people are getting really good results with it. But I don't know that it's the one thing that we should be focusing on. You know, we should be focusing on moving in the right way for ourselves and eating in the right way. And most of all, I think not having as much stress as we give ourselves.
So that was one of the last points that I wanted to get to was that word stress. Why do you think it is that modern life has become so stressful, and what can people actually start to do about that?
Well, I think it's very stressful, and I compare my life and our lives to the hunter-gatherer civilizations that I've studied a lot, because I think that part of it is that we have to be somewhere from 8 to 5 every day or whatever, or most of us do. We are also alone. We're isolated. And I think that that is very stressful in itself. Whereas with a lot of cultures up until kind of recently, there was more of a community. And I mean, you were living side by side with other families and friends and seeing them all day and all night. And I think that it's much harder now. Like if I were to have a child, I would be alone all day, which I think a lot of mothers are, and I would have very little help, and it would be lonely and stressful. And then we don't sleep as much as we probably should because of A, caffeine, and B, because of TV and just the schedule that we're on. So all of those things, and then you have the whole added stress of having a very sugary diet and eating too much and eating these foods that are stressful for your body. So it's kind of a multifaceted challenge for all of us. So for me, I've created a business for myself where I don't have to go anywhere and for any amount of time every day. I get to take care of myself and do my exercise and, you know, do my meditations and see my friends when I want to. And I sleep enough. I make sure that I absolutely get enough sleep every day, because otherwise I'm kind of a mess, and I feed myself and my husband feeds me really good food. And so, I mean, I think that all of those things, that's what I've done in my own life to try to reduce as much stress as I can. And I think that we can all do little things, you know, whether it's adjusting our financial goals or, you know, not having such a big house when we could be working less and having a smaller house, you know, things like that. So it's the little things that add up.
What kind of an effect do you think that change of lifestyle has had on your physiology? Like, how do you actually feel now for having changed that?
Well, I definitely feel less angry. I tend toward anger. And when I had 9-to-5, 8-to-5 jobs, I was just angry a lot because I had to be there and I felt like I had no freedom. And so I also really appreciate my time now. And I can go get a massage or get acupuncture or, you know, go for a walk during the middle of the day when the sun is out. So for me, I recently went through a depression and I'm coming out of that now, and I'm being able to appreciate all of these things again. But I definitely know that if I didn't have this lifestyle, I would probably, I'm assuming that my blood pressure would probably be higher. My blood work might not be as good. I would probably, you know, still be struggling with depression. My health might not be as good as it is. So, I mean, I can't really say, but this is just how I like to live my life.
All right. Now, last question for you, Neely, and this is a big one. If every single person in the world started eating paleo for the next 12 months, what do you think the world would look like?
If every single, well, what do I think the people would look like in the world?
Well, no, the world. What would the world look like if we all just changed our eating back to this natural way?
Well, it would take a lot more than 12 months to even have that be sustainable, because I mean, there are so many people living on grains, pretty much just grains and beans. So, I mean, I think a lot of people's health would change. I've seen my family go from eating a standard diet to paleo, a lot of people in my family, and the changes that it's made for them is just unbelievable. Like getting off of medications, stopping having allergies, stopping, you know, losing a bunch of weight. And so I think that for a lot of people, their health would get better and then their happiness would increase. And maybe people would become more productive. They would be less stressed. And maybe it would be a nicer place to be. But it could also be a much less sustainable place to be because, you know, a lot of people eat meat on paleo. And I don't know how sustainable that is at this point, how we're going right now.
I just realized as I asked you that question, I had no idea what I would answer if someone asked me that. But I think there'd be a lot less friction between people if everyone was eating a lot more healthily. I think people would relate a lot better.
Yeah, I mean, when I see, I think so too. And when I see, you know, the mass shootings and all of that, this is a huge generalization that I'm making, but a lot of times I see those kids who do those things and I wonder if it would have happened if they had had like a really nutrient dense diet and less stress and all of that. So yeah, I mean, these kinds of things, this diet stuff can affect schizophrenia and depression and ADHD and autism and all of those things. And so, yes, I think that interpersonal relationships would be much different.
I have seen studies that suggest that low quality or malnutrition does cause violence.
Yeah. I mean,
this was a study on rats. So one guy got a whole bunch of rats and he misfed one group and they killed each other and ate each other and fought and all that kind of stuff. And the healthy group just happily lived next to each other in their cage.
Yeah, I believe it. I definitely believe it.
And the other interesting thing as well, this guy who was doing this study, he gave these rats an English diet, like a traditional English diet. So like jams and bread and tea and all that kind of stuff. And these rats also developed diseases in almost exactly the same ratios as the English population. So if 12% of the English population had liver problems, 12% of his rats ended up with liver problems. And they were fighting each other all the time, these rats. And it kind of reminded me of like one of those English soccer games where people throw flares at each other or whatever. I thought that was quite interesting.
Well, not to mention the last like 1,000 years of English history or 2,000 years.
Yeah.
With all the wars and it's craziness. So.
They don't mind a bit of a dust up over there.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Neely, this has been an absolute pleasure. I can't thank you enough for joining me. Your book is, I've got it written in front of me, Paleo Comfort, Grain and Dairy Free Recipes for Your Soul. And your website is neelyquinn.com. Are you still over there?
Yeah, I am. And you can also find, if you're a climber and interested in that, where I spend most of my time is at trainingbeta.com. And I do nutrition from there too.
And you have a podcast on that as well, don't you?
Yep. Yeah.
Gotcha. Perfect. Well, thank you so much for joining me, Neely. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Authentic Wellness Radio.